Welcome to the splendor, the spectacle, the sparkling sensation, where the romance, the comedy, and the thrill of Disney fantasies come to electric life.
And as our friend Jiminy said, welcome. Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast, a place each week where like-minded people get together to discuss all things Disney. We'll help you get your Disney fix on. Here we go.
The Magic Kingdom proudly presents, in a million points of musical light, the magical worlds of Disney.
Hello and welcome to show number 321 of the Disney Nerds Podcast. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and welcome back to the show. On this week's show, we're going to bring you part two of Sam's great interviews from the Rise of the Resistance attraction opening down in Walt Disney World. Now, just to remind you, Sam was down there a couple weeks ago when the ride opened up on a great media event that Disney sponsored, and they gave him the opportunity to speak to many, many people, and the interviews were just great. We heard part one a couple weeks ago, and this is part two with a lot more of these great interviews from people from LucasArts, Lucasfilms, Walt Disney World. And before we do that, I just wanted to reach out and say Happy New Year to everybody and look forward to our year in review, the year that was 2019. That'll be coming up very, very soon in the next couple weeks. Okay, so now without further ado, and I tell you, you can hear the joy in Sam's voice, I'm going to turn it over to Sam. Take it away, Sam.
You guys can tell I am having a great time doing these interviews. Talk about nerding out. The next one, an interview with Doug Chang, Executive Vice President and Creative Director at Lucasfilms. Oh my gosh, my mind's going to blow. Let's see if I can keep it together for this interview.
Hello and welcome back to the Disney Nerds Podcast. It is the Rise of the Resistance opening. I'm with Doug, Vice President, Creative Director, Lucasfilms. Mm-hmm. This is amazing.
Oh, thank you. It's actually quite a treat for me myself.
We love that, and it's a treat having you on the show here. So there's so many things I want to ask you and talk about, from the latest series that are streaming to the story group to all that stuff, but we'll stick with Rise of the Resistance, yes, if that's okay.
Yes, please.
Okay, so from that point of view, my first question is time frame for this attraction. Where are we in the Star Wars universe? The planet of Batuu and Galaxy's Edge is somewhere between The Last Jedi and The Rise of Skywalker. Where's this attraction?
Yeah, it's right within that time zone, and we like to keep it kind of very timeless in some ways, because we're bringing the ability, we create this land so that, you know, the guests can come and tell their own stories, live their own experiences. And so we're keeping it very timeless, very broad in general.
Very timeless, broad in general. There are some obvious shout outs to multiple franchises, where I say franchises, within the Star Wars universe. So what are some of your favorite things here in The Rise of Resistance?
Oh, it's hard to say. I mean, I would say that the two highlights for me is definitely Rise of the Resistance and then also the Falcon ride.
Well, absolutely.
Yes.
From that point of view, so what goes into kind of the creative behind that, right? Somebody's got to sit down and say, hey, you're going to make a Millennium Falcon ride, or you're going to make this Rise of Resistance. Where's this whole process start?
Yeah, it actually starts with a story, and it starts with, you know, paper and pencil. And so once we get a story brief in terms of what the land should be, one of the first things that we do is then start to create the identity of the land itself. And so we do a lot of research. And so for Batuu, we actually wanted to ground it in reality. Grounded in something that we can relate to. And that's where, you know, the key to Star Wars design is always to root it in sort of, you know, 80% of it should be grounded in something that we can relate to. And so we grounded it actually based on the Petrified Forest in Arizona.
I love that. The tie-in back to that. So the Black Spire, which is, there's one Black Spire over by Dock Ondors, if I remember, yes, right. And the tie-in's amazing.
Yes, yes. And I think that is the real critical key about, you know, Star Wars ecology is that, you know, it's taking one thing, whether it's the forest moons of Endor or the ice planet of Hoth, and growing it to be a planetary-wide system. And so what we did was we did the same thing. We took the Petrified Forest of Arizona and turned it into a planetary system.
I love it. From a story group point of view, there's so many shout-outs to Batuu that we're starting to see throughout the Star Wars galaxy, whether it's through the Resistance cartoon series or some of the other things. Yes. There's so many ties and connections, and all of the characters have been through here. Mm-hmm. That's an amazing tie from that point of view.
Yes, and I think that's going to be the charm for fans coming here, is that they can experience all that, then come here and then live it themselves.
Especially if you get through the books and you realize that Anakin had visited the cantina at one point, and there was a battle, and then he's back as Vader through Thrawn in the Alliance book. There's so much happening, so much connectivity. Where's this go next?
Wow. Well, see, you know, in some ways, we're leaving that up to the audience and the guests, because this is their story now. This is their experience.
And you have to love that. And that's what this is. This is all about living your experience, whether it's visiting the marketplace, building your own lightsaber, going to check out DJ Rex and his backstory, or understanding those backstories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, and that's really fun because there's all these different elements that we're pulling in now, and we're making it very cohesive. So the Star Wars universe is being unified with, you know, the Galaxy's Edge, essentially.
And that unification, for one more question, lands with Rise of Resistance, because this is the first time that you guys have actually used and created some of the film that's used in here while you were shooting the movies.
Yeah.
How did that process go?
Oh, no, that was great. And that was the wonderful, you know, opportunities that we kind of embraced, was that, you know, while the films were being made, we had the actors actually shoot pieces that actually fit seamlessly into the, you know, the experience here.
So Rey and Poe, they're
yes.
here.
Yes, exactly. So all the footage you see is all authentic Star Wars.
That's absolutely amazing. I want to thank you for your time,
oh, you're
Doug.
Welcome.
This has been amazing. And you guys, there's much more coming from Rise of Resistance, Galaxy's Edge on Batuu. This is amazing. I didn't even ask you about The Mandalorian. You were involved there, right?
I am, yes. But I can't talk about it right now.
Okay, I'll get that off camera. Thank you, guys. Kongolution, we'll see you soon.
This next bit of audio comes from a roundtable session. So picture a conference room in a convention center with lots of tables where I would sit and then interview subjects would walk around. There's more than one media outlet at a table and there's lots of tables. So there's some background noise and I didn't ask all of the questions, but it's good information from people like Scott Trowbridge, who's behind all of Galaxy's Edge, Brad Schrongberg from merchandising, some food and beverage, even representatives from Industrial Light and Magic and Lucasfilms. Hope you guys enjoy this and the audio is acceptable. I will also warn you that there are some spoilers for the attraction during the questions and answers. If you're looking to be spoiler-free going into Rise of the Resistance, you'll probably want to stop now. But make sure you come back later and listen, because there's great information in these interviews.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're great.
Hi. Thanks for being here so early.
Yes.
Thanks for being branded.
Yeah.
I'm on.
And this is just to keep warm.
So it's we easy. Have bios on the table for you guys if you'd like to pull them at all. Today we have John Lineup from Walt's Imagineering. He's our executive creative director, so he's been leading Rise of the Resistance, working really closely with Bill and all of our ILM team. You guys want to introduce yourselves as well.
I'm Bill George, as you all probably saw in the bio. He's a visual effects supervisor for Industrial Light and Magic. He's worked on everything. Genius.
Sorry. Is that John Lorraine? John Lorraine. Lorena and Bill George.
Where do I even start? So we got to experience the attraction yesterday. Absolutely amazing. From a visual ILM point of view, some of the things that you pulled off in there, holy cow. From the hologram,
lightsaber.
The lightsaber. So where do you start? I mean, the hologram, you've been working on patents for 3 years, if I understand right. That finally came together?
Well, that was more driven by Walt Disney Imagineering.
Okay.
And John. We worked a little bit on the media that was projected into that, but all the mechanics, the kind of behind the scenes nuts and bolts, that was all his team.
And that was 3 years in the making, patent-wise, right?
Yeah.
Longer. Okay, fair enough.
Things develop over years, and ideas build on other ideas. So, I think the great thing is that it's really successful, and it's such a treat to actually. This morning, I was watching a pair of guests in there, and these two guys were like doing all this and talking to each other, and at the end of it. One guy just shook his head and was like, I give up. I just, you know.
It's a hologram.
Yeah.
Suspend disbelief. That's what it is.
Exactly. And that's totally rewarding. But yeah, like Bill said, you know, this project's been like, I've never seen a project so where we've been so enmeshed with another group. And, you know, ILM has been a part of this for 3 years now, you know, over 3 years in developing of like, you know, okay, how can we tell the maximum amount of story in these space windows to really put you in the middle of the battle, even though you're not out there in the middle of space, you know, and really tell the story, but not distract you from what's going on inside at the same time, and choreograph all that. That's a major feat, I think.
It's fascinating, and it's really stepping into a movie, because let's be honest, this story could have been a movie. Somebody could have taken this as a script, a director could have turned it into a movie,
and we get to live it. And I mean, that's really the whole idea here. Right?
Exactly. It's another step in storytelling. You know, we don't just have this little rectangle that's static. Everything is moving. You're driving by these things. And then we had to design it to make sure that, because there's two cars and different seats in all those cars, we had to make sure that every person had a good view of what was going on outside.
I love it.
Kind of starting with Pandora, kind of everything became IA and everything, you know, from now on it's just amazing. Are there plans to go back to any of the earlier, you know, things that you have here to upgrade them? Like, you know, different rides that are classic, that are old.
I think Imagineering has always been,
stuff
you know,
like
the rides are always evolving and always being upgraded with the latest technology.
So that's
the, I think you see it throughout the parks, and just about every ride is always in reinvention. That's what keeps everything really fresh here.
We often use technology to help us support the story. So the story is our key goal. At the end of the day, we hope that that technology is hidden by that story. So a lot of attractions, if the story is there, we don't necessarily need to change it unless the technology evolves and changes.
Yeah. That gets back to the hologram. It just is what it is.
Yeah. Right.
We're not going to worry about it.
Yeah.
All right.
The thing is that our audiences, every day they're getting educated as to what's possible, and their expectations evolve. So it makes it really challenging for us to make sure that we need it. Remember one time I went to see a movie with my mom, and she started critiquing the visual effects. But they were a little transparent. I'm like, what is happening here?
Right. Your mom's doing it.
But people are really sophisticated.
It's true.
In their understanding of what they're experiencing.
So along those lines, and how long you've been involved in this project, from Blue Sky originally, Rise of Resistance, what we're going to do, and what you ended up with. Is this where you expect it to be? How did that evolve? Are you beyond expectations?
Actually, today is very validating, because the very early pitches of the ride, and I would always say, we got to build this hangar bay, full-size hangar bay. And
full-size hangar.
Like, that's crazy. You're asking for a full-size space. And so I promise you, people are going to come off and fall to their knees when they see this space. And to actually be there today and see the gasps and just the emotions that overtake people, it's like, whew, good, you were right.
And it's true.
Yeah.
And it's true. And there's so many transitions along the line here and so many details. The rewritability is clearly there. And you guys have done that. Even the few times that I've done it, picking up new things or different things. Yeah, that is Poe over here, or here's what's happening on this side. And is that Nine Numb? Yes, it is. There's so much cool stuff happening. What happens next? I mean, you guys are constantly outdoing yourself, right?
Yep. That's the best part of it. It's like, we'll watch this, and eventually we'll go, you know what? We could do that better, and who knows what happens the next ride.
Bill, you were saying how your mother was critiquing special effects, and I think that's the way with children. I'm a mother of two boys. They're 4 and 6. Very into Star Wars, Kylo Ren, and Stormtroopers. So they're gonna love this. And when I went on it yesterday, several times, I look at it as a mother who can bring my kids. So I love the fact that when it's 40 inches to ride, and it's not a dark, it's dark, but it's not scary dark. I know, like, Snow White used to scare me when I was little, when I would come here. It's not like that. So I love that I can bring, it's a family ride, and we can all enjoy it. So when you're designing these and coming up with the concepts, you kind of keep families in mind. I know other parks do for older, and do you keep that family in mind?
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And shows.
And they're, ongoing, it's a work in progress, and sometimes we do push things a little too dark and we dial it back. Okay, they didn't need to see that ship blow up that way. Okay, we'll put that off to the side. We had a moment like that with the pilots. It's a group thing. We all work together to kind of really fine tune and get that spectrum. I think what's wonderful is we had two weeks ago, we had the volunteer families that rode with Bob Chapek, and I had the opportunity to ride with a family that had a grandpa that was probably in his late 70s, and the daughter that just barely made it on the heights. And it was just great to see. Like, I was always worried, like, in the detention cell, what kind of effect is that going to have on a kid? And like, when Kylo uses the Force, and I'm like watching the girl and the mom's grabs the daughter like, well, my and daughter's like, yeah.
Well, kids watch it and they're yeah. Like, yeah.
So what?
I mean, my kids go up to the doors in Galaxy's Edge and they try to use the Force. And when it opens, they, I mean, to watch it, you know, through their eyes.
Yeah, yeah. And it's great to see the bravery come out in the little kids.
Oh, yeah.
They're just like, yeah, sure.
Over the parents.
Yeah.
The AI is so great for people like me. I've had back surgery and so many of the rides I can't do, but
so it's
like Pandora. I was able to do that and feel like I was on a roller coaster. I did the first part of the ride yesterday. I wasn't sure how bumpy or jerky it would be, but even the first part's an amazing ride. So I like the fact that you're going to be able to accommodate people like me who can't do jerky. You know, the AI is amazing for future rides. It's great.
Thanks. Thank you.
Hey guys.
Michael, how are you?
Good to see you.
Yesterday.
Yes.
Is,
at the Epcot Experience.
Yes. So this is Michael Hudgen. He is our executive producer of Walt Disney Imagineering, and he's going to talk about the Epcot transformation. So if you guys have any questions about what's coming to Epcot.
I got lots of questions, but you're probably going to stop me on most of them.
Probably.
Can you just start off with a basic overview as to why transform Epcot and why in the way you're doing it?
Sure. Yeah. Well, if you were able to get to the Epcot Experience, we have this awesome immersive show that showcases just the broad range of content coming to Epcot in the years ahead, from attractions to entertainment to brand new pavilions themselves. And I think the impetus was that it harkens back really to Walt. He said, you know, when he was envisioning Epcot, that Epcot would always be in a state of becoming, and this is just the next iteration of that evolution for the park. And as we thought about the park at large and a massive investment of this scale, we thought, you know, how can we continue to double down on what works here and what's successful, like the World Showcase, our festival program, some of the great iconic attractions like Spaceship Earth, and how can we build upon that with experiences that are really designed for families, more relevant, things that could be more timeless so that it could last generations, and then of course, how do we bring more Disney to this park? And that can mean characters and franchises, but it can also mean aspects of Disney that are what we do so well, which is great placemaking and developing areas that offer an emotional connection to the guest through the place itself. And so that was sort of our baseline for how we approached all this work.
And in terms of bringing in the characters, when Epcot began, Figment was the character. You didn't see a lot of other Disney characters. Was that something you got in terms of guest feedback? We want more Disney characters in that park?
We have this amazing company that has now, you know, four massive studios, from Star Wars to Pixar to Marvel and Disney Animation itself, and it affords us this great opportunity to find really great organic ways to bring some of these stories to life. I think a few years ago when we opened Frozen Ever After at the Norway Pavilion, it was a great way to link, here's a real place that inspired this wonderfully magical story. Let's bridge that connection for guests and let them step inside that world. We're going to get to do it again next year with Ratatouille, which has been such a great family attraction for guests at Disneyland Paris. And so when we think about, you know, how can we create some great attractions that are fun for guests of all ages, it feels like, you know, getting to step into France and see some of the sights, the culture, the food, and then getting to step into Pixar's version of France and Paris and see some of the crooked buildings and those great characters is a natural extension for what we know guests love about our company and these places. So
when does that open again, Ratatouille?
Ratatouille opens next spring.
Summer 2020.
Summer 2020,
summer,
sorry.
Summer.
How different?
Space 2020 is spring.
Yes.
Winter. That is winter. This
yeah.
That's
yeah.
This winter.
Yes, winter.
Thank you.
Oh,
yep.
This winter.
Yeah.
So Space 2020
is winter Ratatouille summer 2020.
And the Ratatouille ride, how similar or different is it from the one in Paris?
A lot of similarities. I think we're picking up what works so well there.
Right.
I actually got to ride it in Paris once, and it's a great, fun combination of 3D scenes and then these great immersive screen moments. So it's very similar. Our differences in our attraction is that we've got some, you know, there's always the small tweaks and adjustments and things that we'd like to make special about what we do here at Epcot. We also have this crêperie right outside it, which offer sweet and savory crepes. So just when you get hungry on the ride, you can come out and enjoy.
Is it a virtual ride?
It's a physical. It's a physical, yeah. You actually move throughout the space in a rat vehicle, a trackless ride.
So pretty similar ride system.
Yes. Yes.
Can I ask a purely selfish question?
You may.
The photos that were in front.
Good news.
Yes, what's happening?
Photos
I
will
have my Leave a Legacy card.
Leave a Legacy will still be at Epcot. You'll still be able to find your
so
photos.
So translation, my sons will still be there.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Any idea where we heard outside the park? Is that anything you could share?
Relocating within the footprint of Epcot itself. So
okay. Yeah. Within the footprint of Epcot. Speaking of footprint of Epcot, there's a shell game going on in the front right now. We all know that. We can see it. Some of the questions we're getting from our listeners are, when Starbucks opening up again? What's going on with Club Cool? What can you share anything as far as how that share game's going?
There's going to be a new Starbucks location, right?
Yeah, we're opening up
where and when is kind of the when more is the question.
Yes. We're opening up a temporary Starbucks location in the near term.
A temporary Starbucks location. And we expect that, right?
Yeah.
Well, let's put it this way. We all know they can still get the mugs in Mouse Gear, because that's the big question. Where do I get the Starbucks mug? Mm-hmm. They're available in Mouse Gear. But there's a temporary location coming.
Temporary location's coming with a more permanent location coming as well. So,
okay, what do you expect?
Yeah.
Is Club Cool and the Coca-Cola membership thing still there?
Club Cool also transitioning as part of all this, but we'll
when you're all said and done, there will still be a Starbucks and a Club Cool.
Yes.
Yes. That's the real question.
Great. The statue, when I was watching the statue of Walt, how is that, where is that being created, and when will it be placed? I'm so excited. I love that you guys are bringing Walt into this. Everybody was kind of losing, not everybody, but people were worried Epcot was going off his vision. But if you really listen, it's directly on course with Walt's vision.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We love that. The idea behind the Walt statue was that he was a dreamer, just like us, dreaming about what this park would be. And as we think about that vantage point that you have coming off of Spaceship Earth, this being now sort of a thesis statement for the park in some ways, and Walt having that vision for what this place could be, that's really what was the inspiration behind that specific pose and that specific idea of bringing him into the park. We're still working on exactly where and when and things like that, but
so we saw the concept art and it's purposely cloudy around it, so you can't tell if it's on the ground, if it's elevated. You really can't. So that's the statue. But, well, we see what he looks like, but not where he is.
That's right.
We have to have some work to do in the next year. So we'll
somewhere
figure that
roughly
out, so.
Where Project Tomorrow is now.
Yeah.
Is that safe to say?
I would say that it's it feels like that area of the park is really trying to double down in that area of the park.
World Celebration.
And I think today when you walk through that area of the park, it really acts as a thoroughfare to get you to somewhere else.
Exactly.
And so the whole center of the park is really about creating an emotional connection and creating a space that you want to dwell and dream. And so,
even in the front, we have heard that bring the festivals closer to the front as you get to things. And is that really what World Celebration is all about?
And in some ways, that's why we're building that festival pavilion itself. And so by having this brand new home, this epicenter with, you know, in a lot of ways, Epcot sits at the heart of property, and that's the heart of heart. And so we've talked about that sort of being the pulse, right? Being the place where you feel the excitement and the energy that's happening at the park.
Yeah.
Is Guardians of the Galaxy 2021 most likely?
I'm looking at Chelsea.
It is opening with the 50th anniversary. The 50th anniversary celebration.
Which is which year?
2021.
Okay.
This project, what's your time frame for completing the whole project?
Multi-year phase, and we've announced at least through next year what our plan is to open films, of course, Ratatouille, the new nighttime show, Harmonious, all in the next year, but we'll stage this. Unlike, if you think about Disney California Adventure, we opened Cars Land and Buena Vista Street all at the same time. We wanted to get guest content sooner, and so we said, well, let's stagger this.
When it's ready, open it.
Well,
it's never going to be finished, right?
So exactly.
But this is the first phase of the
transformation.
There's a transformation. This is the first phase. We all want to ask you about the second phase. We know you can't say anything, so I won't ask. But
What makes Harmonious, which is opening 2020, what makes Epcot the right place for that particular nighttime show?
I think World Showcase Lagoon specifically is a very special place, and the fact that we're taking Disney music and interpreting it through different languages, different compositions, it really is trying to take a global lens on this music that you know and love so well. And so what better place than World Showcase to be able to
So in that concept art, we saw a Coco on the center of what looked to be a projector in the center. Can we expect other Disney characters to be there as well from different countries?
I think that it'll be a range of great Disney music that would be inspired by this.
Got it. So we're going to see Belle.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm
thank
so
you,
looking forward to Mary Poppins, by the way.
Good.
Oh, yeah. This is Brad Schoenberg from our merchandise department, and we can talk all about
good
the fun
morning.
Special
Brad,
merchandise.
Brad, I'm loving the jacket, man.
Thank you, Brad Johns.
I'm loving the jacket. Is that yeah.
clear? If you're going to get a little cool weather in Florida, you might as well wear one of your own jackets.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
This is from the resistance Brad. Cart.
Reading your thing real quickly here, and you've worked on just about every franchise there is, I see.
Just about every franchise there is. I actually, from Star Wars and Marvel, it's part of my day job, owning the franchises for retail execution, really from a global positioning. But then my team really is embedded with all of the Imagineering teams in all new projects. So getting off the ground, we had Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout, Launch Bay, Avatar, World of Pandora, Galaxy's Edge, Avengers Campus. We're working on Tron, all the Epcot things that Michael probably talked to you about.
Absolutely.
So
so we're here to talk about Rise of Resistance.
Love to.
From that point of view, we saw a bunch of merchandise specific to the attraction. We also know there's merchandise in the Rebel Hangar, and then there's the First Order store. What goes into determining how those themes are going to play and what merchandise goes into those things?
Really started... When I go back to the earliest days, 6 years ago or so on the project, it really came about just listening to Scott Trowbridge. I don't know if he's been through yet.
He hasn't.
But listening to Scott talk about some of the stories that we're going to tell. We had storytellers from Lucasfilm, also there, Dave Filoni, Carrie Beck, just talking about what story was taking place in the land and what would be going on in all the different parts of the land. And then my team would go back and would really just start... You know, writing things and ripping them off and poking them up, you know, putting them up on the wall. And over the course of several months of just starting to bring that, all of a sudden you say, oh, you know what? We've got this and this. That starts to feel like we've got so many creatures. This could be its own thing, like a creature stall.
And so the marketplace evolved that way.
So we started putting that together. We all traveled together. We went to the set of Rogue One, visited Jedha. There's a big marketplace there in Jedha. So a lot of our market probably feels very inspired.
You got to visit the set.
Yes.
That is great. Talk about storytelling.
We were there when they were filming. What was really nice for me that day on the set is that they had a lot of kids on set that day, and you don't always get that in Star Wars and filming where right. there actually is like families living in the space, but they had the kids fully in costume. They had made the prop makers had made little toys for the kids, and they had them in like their pouches and things like that. So what do you like about your toys? And some things they really liked, some things they didn't. And that ended up becoming the Artisan Toy Shop. So the marketplace, the idea was that, you know, there are kids coming and going and living in this world where there's war going on, but they still gotta have fun. So they had made, you know, handmade things out of wood, pounded them out of tin. There was plush, but it was from found materials from the other costumes. So it was like if somebody was making a robe for a kid and they took swatches of it and then tried to say, you've heard the story of Yoda, right? And, you know, they'd handcraft a Yoda out of it. So that's where like the artisan plush came from. And it just all started to form up in stories. And of course we knew that the resistance was going to land. So we had other resistance outposts, and it all just came together. And then we really then went full in with development into those themes.
And I see some merchandise that's Smuggler's Run specific and Rise of the Resistance. So does that come into the attractions themselves? What point do you get involved there?
We were very involved. I mean, we weren't making the attractions, but we were constantly with the team together. And I would say that across all lines of business, there was a real goal. I love the way Scott worked with his team of just everybody was always at the table. So whether we were talking about the attraction or the play app working with the attraction or food and beverage or entertainment or merchandise, it was always building off of each other. So entertainment, we're going to have these characters and these are the way they're going to live within the land. All right, for merchandise, we're going to think about how other guests could get into that role and how they could live that along with the characters you're going to be creating. So with food and beverage, we're going to serve this. All right, then you may need this to serve it in. And we were constantly just bouncing off of one another.
I want to serve it in an R2-D2 salad bowl.
Yeah.
Which is incredible. When I got to look at that,
that was a fun
yesterday,
one.
That is great.
Yeah. Will anything from The Mandalorian make its way into Hollywood Studios? Or?
So we have Mandalorian product available in Keystone Clothiers today. We are adding to that with a child. Have you heard of the Baby Yoda?
Yes, the child.
The child.
I wanted to ask where the child was.
The child.
I was corrected many times. The child.
The child. Well, until it has a formal name and a species, trying to give it something that you can call it. So we're adding to it. So you'll see more apparel coming in with the child just over the next couple of weeks, hopefully before the holidays. And then in the spring, we'll continue to add to the line and you'll see it grow. The Mandalorian show has been extremely popular on Disney Plus. All of the product that we did for the Mandalorian has exceeded all of our plans. It's one of those...
Is that where the Mandalorian Funko is? Because you cannot find the Mandalorian. All of the other ones are everywhere. There's four in the series.
I've seen it, but
he wasn't even yesterday at the media preview. We saw all the Mandalorian merchandise and all the Rise of Skywalker merchandise, and he wasn't there.
He wasn't there?
Mandalorian wasn't there.
We had sent it. May have gotten lost in one of the boxes, but I know I've seen it in locations.
Right.
We're just going to continue to expand on it. We're already working on season two. It was actually on set for season two just a few weeks ago, so the show just gets more exciting.
So they're already in production.
They're already started on season two.
And I did notice that some of the Yoda plushes were sort of pushed to the front of the store.
But they're clearly not the child. Temporary.
Yes, it is not the child.
But it looks enough like the child.
There's been
unprecedented
requests just for Yoda in general, as people rediscover that character, our Jedi Master. So we did pull together, because everyone was coming, can I get any Yoda, anything? So we did pull together some of our existing Yoda items. We had the artisan plush of Yoda in the marketplace that we pulled in, but we're in no way saying that that is the child, because it's not. It's Yoda.
Were you astounded by how the child's popularity just was explosive overnight?
Blown away, because I've lived with the franchise. Actually, I was working on Lucasfilm kind of as a licensee with Disney before we even purchased Lucasfilm. So I've worked on Star Wars, Indiana Jones, those properties for a very long time. I've lived through BB-8 and Porgs, and I know that fun sidekick characters can really, you know, break out into their own world, but I've just never seen anything like the response of the child, and thrilled that people love the character as much as we do. We're all talking very closely so that the stories of Galaxy's Edge, whether told through the park, the retail, the food, television, someone asked at the other table, did I know that my Saudi lightsabers were showing up in Jedi the Fallen Order, the new video game? Yes, I did.
That's storytelling.
We gave them the 3D scans so that there was it's kind of some surprise and delight, and I was thrilled that fans have actually found that they can now build their Saavi lightsaber in a digital world.
That is cool.
So,
you mentioned obscure characters like the child and how big. Are any characters in the Rise of the Resistance that you may see that resurgence happening with, like a Nine Numb or a Lieutenant Beck or those people? Anything?
We had the characters early on. We've used them in a little bit of the storytelling for merchandise, and we'll probably expand on them
as
we go forward. I know. I'm a fan favorite of him too.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hi, everyone.
Hi.
How are you?
Good morning.
Sam from the Disney Nerds Podcast.
Hi, Sam.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for coming this week. All the way from Earth.
All the way from Earth.
I'm told.
Or Pittsburgh, in my case.
Based on the look of your species. I would guess Earth.
Talk about storytelling. You're just jumping right into it here.
Okay.
I feel like yesterday I lived a movie. And I think that was kind of what you were after, right?
That
with the Rise of the Resistance.
That is what all of Star Wars Galaxy's Edge is about. But absolutely, Rise of the Resistance wants to, like the rest of Galaxy's Edge, invite you to be the hero of your own Star Wars story. And to feel like you have been not just remembering a piece of Star Wars or looking through a window at Star Wars or through a screen at Star Wars, but to actually be in the middle of that action and to feel like you're in the middle of it. That is the intent. So if we have been successful with you, then that makes me happy.
I feel like I was in a movie yesterday. I felt like this could be a movie. The plot, the storytelling, all the way through was amazing.
Good.
So all that said.
Well, that's also part of why it's as long as an experience, as immersive as it is to deliver against that.
I completely get it. So along those lines, you were Blue Sky early on, go and pull together Galaxy's Edge, get Star Wars into the parks.
Yep.
We've heard about all these different, this was the A plan, the B plan, or whatever it was. Whenever you got involved from beginning until now, is it with the opening of Rise of Resistance, I feel like Galaxy's Edge is here, it's open. is this what you expected? Is it past your expectations? What do you
think? In terms of?
In terms of just when you walk into the land, you see what you expected.
You know, it doesn't matter what my expectations were, because we base it all on what our guests and what our fans say. Because they're a proxy for you know, for are we doing right by the fan? Are we doing right by the guest? Will we continue to do so as we continue to expand and add new things? And so, my reaction is not really about, oh, look at this place. It's more about, oh, look at these people.
Fair enough.
What have you learned from the reactions to the parks, whether it's your guest surveys or blog feedback, that you might take a look at adding or implementing in the future that isn't in Galaxy's Edge at this point?
Sure, that's a great question. If we were to make those choices based on blog feedback, we wouldn't know what to do. You might be surprised that fan reaction and blog reaction don't agree and are completely contradictory all the time. So we don't actually, but we do talk to our guests. We do talk to our guests and potential guests, and we very much listen to the fans. Every day. We're in the parks every day talking to our guests, listening to them, asking them for their opinions on things. And then we absolutely synthesize that as we, you know, Galaxy's Edge being, you know, Rise of Resistance being open does not cap Galaxy's Edge. You know, it's not the finish line, it's the starting line, right? So we already have lots of, we're not going to announce anything today, but we have lots of new things that we're thinking about. Lots of, you know, some of the things you may have even, you know, you can anticipate that we.
So from a story, working with a story group and what you've done has been phenomenal to watch. Even when you watch The Resistance and the fact that one of the main characters visited Batuu with his family at one point in time. Love that tie together. The timeline has always been somewhere between The Last Jedi and The Rise of Skywalker. That's sort of where we sit. With the release of The Rise of Skywalker coming in a few weeks, does that change anything there, or are those some of the tie-ins you allude to? There's a new movie coming, new characters, new
there
things.
Are. Yeah, there's a lot of new Star Wars storytelling to come. And Black Spire Outpost as a location, which, as you referenced, has been a part of Star Wars, you know, has a history, right?
Absolutely does. Back, Anakin was there. He took the...
Yes, he was. I was not there at the time, but I'm told. The locals tell me
there's some blaster bolts over Olga's where they encounter.
I don't think they're over it yet. And there's a lot of new Star Wars storytelling to come, right? And so Black Spire Outpost Galaxy's Edge as a destination is built and designed to accommodate all that, you know, all that new storytelling. It can kind of like live. It has lived for 1,000 years. It can live for 1,000 years more. The individual stories we tell, like the story of Rise of the Resistance, obviously is a very specific story set in a very specific point in time.
Yes.
Right, and that won't change until we make some major change. But other experiences like Millennium Falcon Smuggler's Run, we can continue to add new destinations, new missions, new characters as our Star Wars storytelling evolves over the years and decades. So that's the plan.
And it makes complete sense. Technology's there.
Yeah. As far as your Galactic Star Cruiser, is that going to be, how large will that be? How many hotel rooms? What's it going to be like?
Well, no hotel rooms.
Oh, it's, I thought you said
because it's not a hotel.
Oh.
It's a space cruiser. So there are cabins.
All right. How many will there be?
Have we announced that?
I'll need to get back with you on that.
I don't know if we've announced that. Have we?
I don't think.
Okay, no. But I'll tell you this: it's not big, because it is in the Galactic Star Cruiser experience, which puts you, if you're not familiar with it, Galaxy's Edge invites you to step into Star Wars for a few hours. Galactic Star Cruiser invites those who want to step into a Star Wars immersive story for a couple of days. So it's really a very brand new idea. It's the most immersive thing I think that we've ever done, and probably anybody's ever done. And because it is so personal, and because it is so again, with you as the center of that focus, it's pretty, it is not a massive ship.
But it can house families.
Yeah. Yeah, think of it like a think of it like a Star Wars version of a cruise ship in space. I have no idea what people would think is very expensive.
That's an opinion, right?
On The Mandalorian, he goes to a bunch of different planets. We often are not told the names of the planets in the first season, but some of them look remarkably like Batuu.
Hmm.
Is there a possibility in season two that he could be going to Batuu?
I will not comment on season two of The Mandalorian at this time.
Has the child ever visited Batuu?
But it's a big universe, and the Mandalorian tends to frequent those parts of the galaxy that are maybe a little bit more off the beaten track.
As Batuu is.
And some of our sharp-eyed guests have already noticed that there's some elements from the Mandalorian in the land. They might not have known what they were when Galaxy's Edge opened because Mandalorian had not yet come out.
Can you say what some of those are?
Oh, yeah, there's some that are really obvious. Like, if you go into Doc Ondar's Den of Antiquities, our guests have started to realize that actually the Mandalorian's pulse rifle and helmet are in Doc's collection. What does that mean?
I thought Boba Fett had the pulse rifle originally. Right, so maybe it was... I just assumed that.
Doc's got it right behind him on his wall.
How much are you guys involved with the parks in the storytelling? How much communication is there between those two realms? Because obviously there are people making the show, there are people doing the
Well, it's a lot more than two realms.
It's multiple realms.
Yes, but the answer is very, 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 very connected, which is why, for example, when Galaxy's Edge opened 6 months ago, the Mandalorian content was already there.
Right.
Right? And there are other things that... you know, that our guests have yet to discover about future Star Wars.
That's all the Lucasfilm story group. That's where that comes together?
It's our combined creative teams.
Scott, thank you for everything.
All right, thank you. Thank you for spending... thanks for leaving Earth and coming here.
Absolutely.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Karen.
Is this someone's seat?
Are we okay here?
No, yeah, you're good.
Okay.
You're good. Brian, how are you?
Yes.
Excellent.
This
how are
is
you?
Chef Brian Piasecki. He is the culinary director at Flavor Lab, which is our research and development area that we have for Walt Disney
Where
World.
Where is Flavor Lab?
Super secret.
Go? I've got a really big star next to my face
I know,
over there.
Because
so
I want to go
high
to the
expectations.
Flavor Lab.
Everyone wants to go to the Flavor Lab.
You're not even going to tell me where it is.
No, it's super secret.
It's super secret.
It's on property. Let me put it that way.
All right, we'll leave it at that. So, in the Flavor Lab, what's going on when it comes to new Star Wars movies? Or anything interesting on the horizon? Or
we always have interesting things on the horizon at the Flavor Lab. Galaxy's Edge will continue to evolve and grow, and menu items will be introduced, and new stuff will come out all the time.
So we just got to talk to Scott about the story group and development. And I guess my question is, one of the things that... from food items in the Star Wars galaxy. We don't see many people eat in Star Wars.
We don't.
If we do, we see like the child would eat a frog or something like those things. Is there any synergies in the works where there may be something that appears in a film that we can go and purchase to eat?
Well, I will say this.
Broth. Bantha broth, I think is what they call it.
I don't know if we're going to ask anyone to eat any frogs. But,
Understood.
So the development of the food items for Galaxy's Edge was a really close partnership between, you know, Scott's team, Walt Disney Imagineering, and even Lucasfilms. So it became, you know, it started off as this brainstorming session of, let's first try to identify every food or beverage seen in all the movies. What is it? Is it a snippet? What are the food items? What does it look like? What do we think it tastes like? Here's the planet that it comes from. Should it be hot? Should it be frozen? Should it be spicy? If you look at Tatooine, very desert-like. So maybe they have those North African kind of Moroccan spices. So we really used a lot of those influences to develop the food. And we knew we had a great opportunity because there isn't a lot there. So we could help write the story. We could help develop that story.
You mentioned Tatooine, and the one thing that is there, and I have to ask you how you got there. I have a desert planet, and I have blue milk. Those are the two things from A New Hope.
Yes.
How do you come up with what ends up being Blue Milk?
Well, we kind of went back to the core issue of Blue Milk, the Bampa, right?
Right.
So we know it comes from a Bampa. So where does it live? What does it eat? Based on those two things, what might the milk taste like?
Okay.
We know it'd be a little sweet, right? We know it's blue. We know we want it cool, refreshing. We also knew we wanted it to appeal to a vast audience. And thinking about drinking actual milk or a milk flavored or colored in Florida when it's 100 degrees,
yeah,
probably not a really good idea. So those elements of rice milk, coconut milk played an important part in that.
This is why I want to visit the Flavor Lab. Because everything you just described is a process that I love to try. Okay.
Did a lot of that play into, I'm plant-based occasionally,
okay,
and I appreciate and love the efforts that Disney's making with vegan and plant-based. So did, when you were coming up with like the rice milk and things like that, did you know you were going in the direction? Because I really feel like Galaxy's Edge kicked off the whole plant-based movement here in Walt Disney World. So did you try to intentionally incorporate that, or did it happen like, we don't want to use milk, here's our options, or wait, they're plant-based, let's, you know, go from there?
I think through the development process, it really evolved into that, mm-hmm, and then
right,
we said, this is really great.
And it's a thing. Like, I mean, it's a huge...
Yeah, it is totally
yes,
a thing.
Yeah.
It is one of the top food trends that we're seeing, not just nationwide, but really across the globe.
Yeah.
So we knew we had a winner. And then as we got through more and more development, we stuck with it. I believe one of the initial iterations of it was just rice milk, but it lacked some punch, it lacked some additional mouthfeel, some
yeah,
flavoring components. So the addition of the coconut milk, you know, really
yeah,
kind of helped that. So it just kind of grew and evolved, and
right,
we're super, super happy with it.
Yeah, so am I.
Yeah, good.
Had you anticipated the, like, Team Blue, Team Green, the strange...
And what
no,
is your favorite?
No, I like them all.
Yeah.
No, I'm a Blue fan. Honestly, I am a Blue fan.
Coming through the Flavor Kitchen, you have to have mixed them together. That's my favorite.
Do I have to admit to that?
Blue and green together. I will bring it up.
You don't have to answer that,
that,
Brian. You do not have to answer that.
Blue and green together are perfect.
Is that Team Turquoise?
I don't know what it is, but it's good. The flavor's balanced.
As a professional culinarian, it is my duty
to try that.
To do all combinations possible.
And it's not bad.
So yeah, no, it's not bad.
I think it's good.
But there's incredible passion around Team Blue, Team Green.
Yeah.
So we love it. We're waiting for the t-shirts to come out that say, I'm Team Blue.
It's amazing how finger drink can create a thing like Team Blue, Team Green,
yes,
you know, and it trends on social media, all out of blue milk or green milk. So it's
yeah,
crazy how food can evolve into like a movement.
Yeah, and that's
you just
super
watched
fun.
Yes, they buy both,
yeah,
they set them over, they take pictures of them.
So the two desserts that we have at Docking Bay 7 Food & Cargo, the Oi Oi Puff with the raspberry mousse on the inside, and then the Batu Bon, the double chocolate with the coffee center.
Both with the Batu logo chocolate thing
absolutely,
on top, which are really good.
Which is really cool.
Now, was
yeah,
it your intention to kind of, and I love this about Galaxy's Edge, is that it's not traditional quick service, and you know, I have a 4 and 6 year old, so sitting down at Disney to a nice dinner is not really an option.
Yeah.
So when we look for quick service, Galaxy's Edge gives us like that sit down dinner feel.
Mm-hmm.
It's not chicken fingers or french fry baskets.
Right.
And was that your intention to always not make it not your traditional?
Absolutely.
I love it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Because, again, we have the opportunity to create what would they eat on this planet. So they probably wouldn't be able to get chicken fingers.
Yeah.
They probably don't do french fries on that too. Right?
Yeah.
So lots of opportunity to really push the envelope on that and have familiar flavors, because we know our travelers are going to have 4 and 6 year olds that may not want to eat a frog.
But
right?
The way it's
so,
presented to them, honestly, the presentation, even when it's handed over with the counter, they want to eat it. Like, I haven't tried to convince them anything. It's just, the way it's presented and the atmosphere, and it's just, there's no convincing eating. So
that's great.
That's a testament to
that's wonderful to hear.
Yeah.
So there is one familiar food on Batu, that's popcorn, that's flavored sort of interesting. How has that gone over, and are there any new popcorn flavors in the future?
It's been really, really well received. I think it's an initial shock almost visually, because when you see it, it's so different looking. But once you eat it, and talk about mixing.
Do both flavors, I was just going to say.
Yes,
flavors.
Do both flavors together.
Okay, encouraging here.
It's
okay.
Absolutely fantastic. Yes. We will continue to experiment with the flavors and introduce new flavors for all the travelers on Batu. I know they're doing that in California with a chocolate flavored type popcorn. So we'll continue to evolve that as well.
Love it.
I love the charcuterie
at
Orgas.
At Orgas?
Yes. I mean, it's just
very,
the,
very different.
The look of it.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
We're super proud of all that stuff. Yeah.
And Brian and team are also working on other new concepts. If you want to touch on Riviera or a new restaurant, we're going to have at Disney Hollywood Studios.
Yeah. The backyard barbecue. Yes.
The backyard barbecue. You're involved there as well. That's awesome.
Yeah. So we're really excited about that. Especially because I'm a huge Toy Story fan.
Yeah.
Even better. So yeah. Toy Story inspired dishes, I'm assuming we're going to find.
It's going to be fantastic.
Okay. Thank you.
Are they ready?
Thank you.
Oh, shoot.
Thank you very much.
Breakfast this morning was lovely.
Okay.
Just looked cool.
Yeah, the Riviera breakfast.
Thank
all
you so
inspired
much.
By the, all inspired by the character experience at Topolino's.
So looking forward to it.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, how are you?
Hi.
Well, wonderful, John. How are you?
Good, thank you.
So everyone, this is John Georges, executive producer of Walt Disney Imagineering. So worked on Rise of the Resistance on both coasts, Walt Disney World and Disneyland, as well as the land here at Disney Hollywood Studios. So we talk a lot about story and bringing the attraction to life.
Did you all get to go on it?
Yes.
We did.
How many times?
We were able to experience three.
Awesome.
Yes.
You?
Two and a half.
Okay, all right, good. All right, good. To be your adventures will continue as well.
That's good. Yeah, that is right.
So today I heard they're doing the boarding passes. Will that continue or will it eventually transition to fast pass?
So, this is more of an operation. So since John's more on the design side, gotcha. It's not the expert on that, but you can talk more about story.
So in terms of the... Can you talk more about story overall, Galaxy's Edge, or about the rides in particular?
Any and all.
Any story. Like, yep. Okay. So how did you settle on what became the story for Rise of the Resistance? I mean, you could have blue-skied it, you could have done anything.
Right.
What made this the right story for that particular
ride?
Yeah,
that's a good question. So, and, you know, I've shared this with a couple of people. I think, you know, when we sat down to craft Star Wars Galaxy's Edge and the planet Batuu and the village of Black Spire Outpost, We looked at a lot of different places we could go in the galaxy, and those of us who were raised with the franchise, the logical answer was Tatooine. We should build Tatooine, right? Because we all knew it. And then you go, well, it's a desert planet, and there's not one tree on the planet, and do you really want to build that in Florida or Southern California? And like, no. And I think the breakthrough finally came when we said, let's create a new place that nobody had been to before. It's part of Star Wars canon and lore, but let's take you to the planet Batuu so you can authentically have your own adventure. So you're not chasing Luke and Leia across the galaxy and trying to relive their adventures. We're going to bring you somewhere new and you can live your own. So early on, we did a lot of focus groups testing and sort of a lot of Imagineering focus groups internal too, and said, look, Millennium Falcon, whatever we do, it has to be there. Everybody wants to get on that ship. Ideally, everybody wants to get behind the controls and fly that ship. So I think we authentically delivered on that experience. The other piece of this was, how do you deliver the cinematic scale of Star Wars? That these movies are larger than life on a big screen, everything's huge. You could do it with 3D glasses and sort of cheat it as a media-based attraction, or you just go build it. So I think our first brainstorms, we start every project at Imagineering in a phase called Blue Sky, where we sit around a table very much like this and we just talk about story ideas. What could it be? And then we work with illustrators and storyboard artists and we start sketching out a series of scenes and events that kind of piece together and work with writers. And we crafted a story that we thought, you know, was worthy of being told. And we actually had complete access to the Lucasfilm team of storytellers and filmmakers. So their art department was our art department. Their story team was embedded with the Imagineering team. So we crafted something that we felt would be sort of long-lasting.
Now, I thought that Black Spire Outpost and Batuu were created just for Galaxy's Edge, but they existed prior to that in Star Wars?
They are part of Star Wars canon storytelling, yes. They are now.
But they didn't exist
prior
to Galaxy's Edge.
I apologize. Yes.
So Anakin wasn't there, right? He was at...
Annika was there. In the books,
yeah,
that
in the novelization, right?
Canon.
It is all connected, right?
Okay.
But
all connected.
I guess my point was we hadn't taken you there cinematically previously, right. So we created an original place where you could sort of live your own adventure.
And then you retcon
and then it's
stuff.
Absolutely. Okay.
Books, comic books, you right. name it, everything within the.
It came
it's
together.
All about storytelling.
Absolutely.
And that's really Galaxy's Edge, or Rise of Resistance is living a movie. That's
yes.
the way I look at it. I
that's
felt
great.
Like that's what I did when people asked me what it was.
Good.
Here's my logistics question
okay.
for you in there.
Okay.
When you first board the Star Destroyer, mm-hmm. right, and you're escorted in through and you see all the stormtroopers, and mm-hmm. was that designed as a place for guests to sort of mingle and take pictures before getting in the next line?
Yeah.
What were your thoughts when you did that?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it really was designed as a place to say, I have authentically been transported to the bridge, to the deck of a Star Destroyer,
yes.
right?
I mean, your jaw drops as soon as you're
right.
Door.
And you can't cheat that, right? You
no.
have to build it full scale. I was telling the last group, we went to the Disney Studios at the beginning of this project and went to an empty soundstage on the Disney Studios lot and measured the soundstage and said, okay, how big is the soundstage? Just to get a sense of the scale, and how big would this scene have to be believably a hangar bay inside a Star Destroyer? And so that helped us as a visual mock-up to say, okay, we can't get any smaller than this, you know? And then, you know, as a project team, we had to justify that giant built volume as basically a pass-through hallway.
And that's what it is. That's why I wasn't sure.
It's
there's a ride vehicle that I see some people jump in. There's a full-size tie.
It is your arrival hallway. It is your ship has been abducted by the First Order. You are being escorted off, and you're being sent to interrogation.
Yes.
That is what the scene's purpose is.
But you are okay with people mingling.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've seen a lot of selfie sticks this morning. There's going to be a lot of photos taken. That's
not
going to be very Instagram.
Not
yes. It's a camera mount.
It's
a approved
perfect,
camera mount.
Yes.
Yes.
It's a perfect juxtaposition to the cure.
Yes. Yes.
Which is so organic in this because metal.
I think it's so iconic to Star Wars, where you go through moments of compression inside a spaceship and then these expansive environments. And I think that wow of being on a transport ship and then coming out into that environment is just. I mean, we listened to people gasp this morning as they were getting off the ship.
Yeah, absolutely. And very similar when you go into the room with the AT-ATs, or when you're coming around the corner and the
right.
guns are blasting, and just an angle we've never seen.
Right.
Can we discuss the room for like, the walkers? I don't even have words. That was amazing when you go around the corner and they're there, and I saw pictures. And actually, Rise of the Resistance, I will say, through the pictures that have been released and everything over the past few months, it was true to those pictures.
That's
like,
awesome.
There is not one surprise. It was true to it. But how do you design those walkers? I mean,
well, again, we work with the filmmakers, so that is, you know, a First Order AT-AT, right? That
yeah.
That is the design. We work with Doug Chang at Lucasfilm, who's the VP of design for Lucas and for Star Wars brand. And, you know, we modeled that. We actually took their models and then, you know, what they do with it as a digital asset with ILM is very different than building it physically for permanent use at a theme park. So, but the design itself was pretty baked, and we just
yeah.
built it.
And then to go up, and then you're eye level with it.
I think that is my favorite part.
I heard about a drop,
right.
but I did not expect that, and
that's
the
awesome.
Eye level thing is awesome.
And it's pretty exhilarating. You go up pretty fast. I was
it's
like,
really
this
cool.
is
it
fast.
Is. No other
There's
attraction does that.
Two different tracks, too. You're
yeah.
up on the side,
yeah.
you're up on the
front. So in my mind, I'm like, how does the track system work now? I was like trying to figure all that out. I figured out Tower of Terror. Now I got to look up.
Good. All right.
It's going to take
some
time.
We'll talk later.
I know,
you
yeah.
tell me later.
That's, yeah.
So in terms of the storytelling for Galaxy's Edge, you've got the story for Falcon, you've got the story for Rise of Resistance,
right.
for the land as a whole.
Yep.
We know there's space for at least one more.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys started noodling around with that at all?
You know, I'm not the person to ask because I've been inside Rise of the Resistance for 3.5 years and haven't really left. But I think the land was imagined as an active spaceport, and you are arriving there today. And that means any other characters who might be around today could also appear. So we think about the land as sort of a flexible platform for coming and going, right? When you cross the threshold and go into one of the attractions, that is set at a specific moment in time. Kylo's there, Hux is there, Rey is there, Finn is there. That says, you know, I'm in that episode 8 time frame, right?
Right.
So, but I think the land itself will continue to evolve and introduce new characters and stories and activities and other things. And as you said, there's always room for expansion.
As the films do, as we move away from Skywalker's?
I think that's the intent, yeah. I mean, it's a living land, right? That is one that will continue to evolve.
Is Adam Driver voice?
Yes. Yeah. Everybody who you see and heard is the real deal. Yep.
filmed during The Rise of Skywalker, right?
Filmed during...
Or The Last Jedi.
Yes, Last Jedi. Last Jedi. Okay. Yep. We've been working on this for a while.
Clearly. Really clearly.
What else were you guys impressed with? Just...
I didn't know about the drop, so I really liked the drop.
I love the fact that, you know, I love the multiple ride systems because I think it sort of takes it to another level.
Mm-hmm.
And then I love the fact by the time you kind of get to that moment, you sort of feel like you know what that ride vehicle can do. It's kind of gone forwards and backwards and sideways, and Kylo uses the force and pulls you in, and then you break free, and you think, okay, I'm done, I understand it. And then the bottom falls out, and you're like, I didn't see that coming at all. You know, I think it's a really exhilarating...
The visual was there. You could see the other ones.
Yeah. Right. You knew it was coming. Did you sense it at that point?
Like, yes.
Okay, I could see it was coming then.
I heard the thing almost lock in, and we got
We're
going now.
Yeah, that's great.
Thank you for your time. You're welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for coming.
Okay, everyone. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be with our amazing folks today.
Wow, talk about a ton of information. There it is, firsthand for you to listen to, you to make your own opinions. And then what we're going to do on future Disney Nerds podcasts is dig into all of this information and find out what this all means, because Galaxy's Edge is an immersive story. The attractions are not rides. The story continues from the land into the attraction and back. And if you realize that and understand it going in, it makes the experience that much better. Thank you guys for listening. May the Force be with you.
If you would like to join our jamboree, there's a simple rule that's compulsory. Mortals pay a token fee. Rest in peace, the Horn.